Hey everybody, Ian here. Before we get started with the show, we at Not Another Film Podcast wanted to take a minute to check in. As I'm sure you're aware, we as a country are in the midst of an incredibly pivotal moment, fighting against rigid class and structural racism and disgusting displays of police brutality in the fight for basic human rights for black and brown communities across the country. Even though we may be a small, silly movie podcast, we also recognize that we have a platform and a voice where others don't, and we want to use that platform and voice to amplify some of the ways that we, and hopefully you, can support the contributions of black and indigenous people of color in our community. Some places that we have decided to donate, and of course some places that many other people have that you may want to check out, are the ACLU, the NAACP Defense and Educational Fund, the Black Visions Collective, the Louisville Community Bail Fund, the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, the Know Your Rights Camp, For the Guarls, Black Trans Protesters Emergency Fund, any local community bail funds, really, and of course, Black Lives Matter and all of their local and community chapters. If you are like us and you happen to be in the Chicagoland area, then please, please, please check out some of these amazing Black-owned restaurants and businesses, including some of our favorites, Ethiopian Diamond, The Urban Grill, That's a Burger, Ma's Q House, Soul Vegan, Batter and Berries, Two Fish Crab Shack, The Currency Exchange Cafe, and the amazing Semicolon Bookstore. We have links to lists and many more restaurants and businesses in the Chicagoland area in our show notes, so if you can support, feel free to check it out. Stay safe, stay vigilant, get tested for COVID-19 if you can, wear a mask, wash your dirty little hands, keep educating yourself on the racial and gendered inequalities in our country and in our entertainment, and remember, Black Lives Matter. All Black Lives Matter. Keep protesting, keep pushing. We love you. And now, the show. And on that note, folks, welcome to another episode of Not Another Film Podcast. This is the podcast where we take movies we used to love as kids and we re-examine them in the sobering, quarantined light of 2020.
You say kids, but this movie is not a kid's movie.
It is not a kid's movie.
No.
Absolutely not. We're here.
If you were a kid watching this movie, your parents did not do their job.
No, we're talking Caligula here on Not Another Film. No, I'm kidding. We're talking about the 1999 hockey sports comedy family film, Mystery Alaska. My name is Ian Gears. I'm one of your co-hosts. Also joined by Lauren Thompson. How are you?
I'm great.
That's it?
Do I need more description?
Oh my God. You know what? You move your life so fast. You need to take a minute, slow down like the people in Mystery. And we're joined by the person who recommended this movie to us, Stephanie Din. How are you, Steph?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Of course. We love having you here.
So excited.
Steph, I've been pestering you to get on this podcast for like 2 years at this point. I'm so happy that you wanted to do it finally.
Thank you.
I like chased you down for a whole summer trying to be like, all right, are we going to do this or what?
Well, it just took us being quarantined in different
pandemic
locations.
Yeah. It's good to know who your real friends are.
To be fair, this is probably the only way I would have had real time to do
That is factually accurate.
That is true.
You're an
unbelievably busy person.
Yeah. You were, like, all that summer, you were, like, doing work, and we were just like, we're just actors.
We're like, don't you want to watch a movie and fart about it for 90 minutes? Like,
and Steph's like, I have a job. What are you talking about?
Oh, maybe after I write up your notes and your schedules and have a meeting with the director and...
Yeah, once I figure all this out for you dum-dums.
Yeah, exactly. So talk to me about why Mystery Alaska. When did you first see this movie? What is your relationship to this movie? Give me your whole story.
I did see this movie when it came out because I have always been a hockey fan. I have always been a Hank Azaria fan. So yes. I basically had to see it. There was no choice for me.
Were you mad that they took the hockey scene where Godzilla plays hockey against the New York Rangers out of the 1998 Godzilla?
I wrote letters, let me tell you. But you know what? There's only one of me and a lot of Godzilla. So.
In the 90s, letters did nothing. Letters did fuck all.
Yeah, but I, you know, hockey is my favorite sport, if you know me. And I just thought, I mean, it's a pretty good cast. I mean, look at it.
It's an insane cast.
Great people in it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought, you know, movie from the 90s, not again, like you said, not completely childhood.
Yeah.
But younger days for some of us.
Did you always, and when you first saw this movie, were you like really taken with it? Was there, what about it really like made you connect with it?
Well, I mean, first of all, hockey.
Besides Russell Crowe's luscious locks. Right? He's got Swayze hair in this movie.
I told you how many times he run his fingers through it, brush it aside, do the flip. I mean, everything.
It's the softest he's ever looked. Like, his hair looks soft, his skin looks soft, like he's wearing flannel all the time. Like, he just looks like he'd be pleasant to, like, pet, you know?
Russell Crowe's the Gerard Butler I'd want to hang out with.
Yeah. There's not much else they could do but, you know, care for their manes and wear flannel. Yeah. But I loved it because I love hockey, and I love how much other people love hockey. And it was, you know, like they said in the movie, even, it's about heart. And you guys know me, and for anyone else, it's, I'm a sucker for stuff like that, you know? Whether it's cheesy, corny, whatever, I'll still fall for it. And, you know, think it's beautiful and wonderful. And having, you know, Hank Azaria was so against the town in the beginning, but man, he just stood up and cheered and, you know.
It feels, sorry to interrupt you, but like one of the things that strikes me about this movie that I wasn't expecting was that it feels so old school. Like, it feels like I've been like watching in this quarantine, one of my activities I've like made for myself is like watching a lot of old movies that I've just never seen before. I just have a huge blind spot, like pretty much with like most movies before 1990. And so I'm just trying really hard to like kind of gain a foundation.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I've seen, especially in like American movies of like the 40s and 50s, is just like this real, like so much real estate is put on wholesome family values and like rallying with the town and like being a part of your community and the role that you serve in a greater machine being something to be proud of. And like, so there's something about this movie that I kind of admittedly was not expecting, because I thought this was going to be a lot more like the Mighty Ducks.
It is not.
It is not.
It is not like the Mighty Ducks. But like Mary McCormack says, you know, to Russell Crowe, she didn't choose the town. She chose him.
We'll get to that scene. I'm excited to talk about that scene. Right. But yeah, I had never seen this movie until today. And I do remember, like, I remember being aware of it when it came out, and then I didn't think much of it. I was not a huge hockey fan. That's why I'm excited to have you on the show to talk about all of the hockey facts that I just do not know. But I was kind of like, nah, I liked Russell Crowe, I guess, but I didn't know him that well when it came out, obviously. And then, like, until now, including you, like every 3 or 4 years, somebody will mention this movie and remind me that it exists and be like, you know, Mystery Alaska is actually pretty good. And like, so, and it's always brought up in that cadence. And I'm always like, I should probably give that movie a watch. Yeah, I'll see you later. Yeah, I'll see you later. And then finally got to take time to watch it. And guys, Mystery Alaska is pretty good. Like, yeah. Lauren, what about you? What was your experience with this?
I've never heard of this film before. I had never seen this film. Ian told me the name of the film, and in my head, two possibilities popped up for what this movie was about. And one of them was like a Jessica Fletcher like murder mystery, like set, like it's a mystery set in Alaska.
Which it almost becomes. Yeah. And we'll talk about the point in this movie where it could easily become that.
Yeah. And then the other option in my head was, it sounded like on the History Channel when it's like Ice Road Truckers, like Mystery Alaska. I was just like, oh, it's cool. It's like mysteries that from the past of Alaska. So those are the two images that popped up in my head. And then I was like, oh, Ian, what is this movie even about? And he said, it's a hockey movie. And I said, okay, that would have been probably my eighth guess.
That's fair.
I know nothing about this film. I know nothing about hockey. Of the ice sports, I am much more, anyone who knows me knows that I am much more of a figure skating person, huge figure skating enthusiast. But hockey is I think I've been to one hockey game, the Tampa Bay Lightning, with my dad, and I didn't know what was going on. But I loved the enthusiasm in the crowd, I will say. It's a very, like, hands-on sport.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought this is, I jumped right in. I don't think I've ever seen a hockey movie before. I've never even seen the Mighty Ducks.
You've never seen Miracle?
What?
No. I've never seen Miracle.
Never seen the Mighty Ducks?
Ian. Mighty Ducks.
I've got to change this.
I have not seen a single Mighty Duck. Nary a duck in sight.
We've watched so many movies. We just did Heavyweights on the show last week, and we talked a lot about how pretty much that cast is kind of like everybody but Joshua Jackson and the Mighty Ducks taking a summer to go to Fat Camp and do Heavyweights.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that you rode for that bit when we did it. Now I know that you've never even...
No, it was peer pressure. I was just going along with the bit. I just nodded and went, sure, that sounds right.
I don't even know you.
No,
I need someone back on to go over Mighty Ducks with you.
I thought you knew this, but apparently...
Very well may take you up on that.
I've got them all... Yeah.
Memories. Yeah, and they're all on the Plus now. They're all on the Disney Plus,
Disney
right?
Disney Plus. How many Mighty Ducks movies are there?
Three?
Yeah.
That's a lot of ducks.
And a TV show that featured actual ducks.
What? Correct. Oh, that's more my speed. I want to see the animated ducks.
That show was dope, man. Show was real cool.
Not to get away from Mystery Alaska, but Mighty Ducks inspired a friggin' NHL team because the Anaheim Mighty Ducks did not exist.
I did not know that. That's incredible.
The movie came out. The first movie came out, and then the team.
Are they in the NHL or the AHL?
They're in the NHL.
Holy shit.
So because they got a real team before they got their first sequel. That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
Good for them. You know, good for Mighty Ducks.
It didn't happen for our mystery men. And then when I say that, I mean that that's what they probably should have gone with instead of the mystery Eskimos.
I don't even think they ended up being the mystery. I think they just ended up being mystery.
Mystery.
The mystery team.
Yeah.
The Mystery Team.
The Mystery Team, which is another movie we have done on this podcast.
No, we haven't. We've talked about
Mystery Men?
Mystery Men.
Oh, we did Mystery Men. Yeah. Is there a movie called Mystery Team?
Yes, I've shown it to you. It's with Donald Glover and Aubrey Plaza.
Yes.
I don't know about that one. I know Mystery Men, obviously.
So there's Mystery Team.
You ride for Mystery Men.
Mystery Alaska.
Mystery Alaska and Mystery Men.
Yeah, he was a mystery in the late 90s. And literally in 1999, the man was a mystery.
People could only ever watch two of the three films. Ian has flown too close to the sun. He has gotten the Infinity Gauntlet of mystery movies.
Well, okay, so mystery is going to be a great segue into this. Because this
about
movie...
Mystery Inc., the Scooby-Doo movie.
No, but this movie, first of all, it's called Scoob and we don't talk about it. Third of all, So this movie came out in 1999 and was directed, this is shocking, was directed by Jay Roach. Jay Roach... You may know from doing previous Not Another Film podcast selection, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery.
That is so strange. Wait, mystery!
I told you, that's how we were going to link it.
Hence, also, the guest, Mike Myers.
Yeah, Mike Myers showing up for a little bit.
Oh my God. He directed, that was wild when he showed up.
He directed, I believe, all three Austin Powers movies. He also directed Meet the Parents and Meet the Fockers after this. He also went on, and his career has since changed quite a bit. He's gone on to do a lot of the political movies on HBO that came out in like the 2000s, like the Sarah Palin movie and the Recount movie. Those were all him. And then last year he did Bombshell, which I still haven't seen yet, but have heard mixed things about. So that's, I mean, his career has really taken a very interesting
trajectory.
Path, and it's like it's so odd that this movie he did this, because it just doesn't feel like anything in that umbrella of movies.
Yeah.
Steph, do you have anything to add about Jay Roach's illustrious career?
I mean, nothing more really than what you said. It's just it's fascinating. I mean, you couldn't be more different. Like, have you know the different genres?
Yeah.
Than
this Austin movie Powers, is and such then, a huge like, departure.
Yeah.
It's so weird. They don't even, like, they really don't feel like they're done by the same director.
It's a strange tone for a movie, too, because it is such a, it feels like it should be such, like, a very wholesome family movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are scenes where it's just, like, sex scenes, or people are saying, fuck you.
Yeah.
And there's adultery, and there's a kid coming in his pants. Like, it's a whole thing.
I need to also point out, you know, we're riding up to the cusp of Cruel Intentions. Varsity Blues is on its way out, or had just come out. This was a thing. These were, like, these adult kind of comedy drama, like light comedies, like dramas. They were about small towns. It was a thing. There was a market for it. I guess we'll get to that, but.
Was there?
Yeah, I mean, the more adult, you know, things, and it did surprise me when I saw it, but I kind of tried to, I was like, eh, hockey, okay.
Well, that's the thing, though, is because it presents as a hockey movie. I watched the trailer again yesterday, and it's like, the trailer's like, hockey, 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 underdogs, underdogs, hockey. Yeah. And you're like, fuck, yes. And then this movie kind of only has like maybe 30 minutes of hockey in it. And right. It's mostly like a character port. It's kind of like Our Town with hockey. Yeah. I kept turning to Laura and I was like, I seriously think, like, no irony here. And this isn't a dig at this movie. I think this is a play. I kind of think it's a more interesting just about like this idea of this small town that's got this incredibly humble tradition of meeting up every Saturday and playing like the world's longest pickup game of hockey gets together and because of like a little bit of press has to go against like a major league team. Like that's a really, and then like the buildup of like, is it going to happen? Isn't it going to happen? Like what, and what does that do to the town? Which is what this movie is for like an hour and a half. Yeah. And then it's like, oh fuck, we forgot we're a hockey movie. And then they're like,
yeah, it's just like kind of a series of vignettes.
Yeah. But then with a really dope hockey match at the end.
Yeah. And then at the end you're like, oh, that's right. Hockey. Yes, that is correct. There is hockey in this film.
Yeah. It's shot. I was just so not expecting that.
There's
from
no
this
hockey
movie.
Montage, like where they get the team, they like whip the team into shape. Like they're already pretty good at the beginning. Like
they
it's
I mean, they do like, a little bit with the dog sled and the, you know.
Yeah, but it's not like an
it's not a huge thing.
It's not the formula of a usual sports movie where like the hockey is the skeleton of the thing. It's really like it is sort of like peripheral at times. Because there's like a courtroom drama in here. There's like a kitchen sink drama in here. There's like a teen sex comedy happen over there. There's like a sexual harassment subplot. It feels like where like there's a whole commentary on like locker room talk that I was very upset by. There's just a lot going on in this film.
Yeah, but
and then you have like the Hank Azaria thing where it's like the hometown boy coming home that's like become a big shot. And
oh, I want to get to Hank Azaria soon.
I would love to talk about Hank Azaria
because there's
playing the least Hank Azaria character he's ever played.
I'm so glad he stole this role from whatever Dylan McDermott Mulroney was gonna play. Thank God. No offense to those actors, but like Hank Azaria is like always at least gonna do something interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
When did you fall in love with Hank Azaria, Steph?
Oh gosh. I mean, The Simpsons.
Okay.
You know, and then
it's just always existed within you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think like I looked him up, you know, after knowing that he did voices.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right.
Who's this Joker?
Right. and I just kind of, because he's kind of one of those guys that's just always there, you know? You're like, oh, right, and Hank Azaria. That's great. And,
exactly.
Oh, and Hank Azaria's in this. Okay, great.
It's all, yeah, you always get a little bit happier. He's one of those actors that you're always a little happier when he's in stuff.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he just, you know he's going to bring something. It may be huge.
Tell you, he was a pretty great Lancelot in Spamalot, too.
Oh, shit, you saw that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
He's great in that. Yeah. I think I saw that, too. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, even from doing voice work on The Simpsons and, like, in Anastasia and stuff like that, from then going on, and, I mean, we talked about it in the Mystery Men episode.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he is a Hall of Famer. Welcome to the Not Another Film Podcast Hall of Fame, Hank Azaria.
Yeah. Yay.
I'm also so excited to do the 1998 Godzilla movie. I want to do it so badly.
Also, Ian most knows Hank Azaria from Ian's favorite series of movies, The Night at the Museum.
Oh, my God. Steph.
Right?
They're so good. Thank you.
He's
they're so good.
Ian is obsessed with the Night of the Museum movies.
I think that they're severely underrated.
Specifically the Smithsonian one.
Yeah, thank you. Because they're great. Because they're really, really good.
Ian's also just obsessed with Amy Adams as Amelia Earhart.
She's maybe my biggest movie crush.
She's perfect.
She's incredible.
Obsessed. Yeah.
anyway, let's get back to Hank Azaria, please. Gosh, I can't believe you.
I don't think I was ever off Hank Azaria.
The first words in this movie are a child saying, fuck me, which was awesome. Kids cursing is not lost on me. I think it's great. It's like when we saw Captain Underpants and I was like, you know what, a fart, if you can make a fart joke funny, that shit'll soar, man. Like, that shit's funny. Same with little kid cursing. I'm always a fan.
Yeah.
And at this point, Steph, were you just like, all right, I'm all in. This little kid just said, fuck me.
Well, I mean,
you had me at fuck me.
Right. I think it adds to the charm of the small town where, yep, you know, like, that's just something that's going to happen. They're going to hear it. But, you know, again, sports, men, locker room.
Exactly. You're painting a picture.
Yeah.
You're painting a very severe picture of this town.
And all of that comes flooding in with a simple child cursing, knowing that it's a sports movie.
Which is where my interest was piqued, because from the first line of a child saying, fuck me, you only have two roads that this movie can go down. A seedy road where everyone in the town has a dark underbelly secret as part of secret societies or weird crime syndicates, or an incredibly quirky small town.
Yes.
And for like 30 minutes, this movie is on both of those roads. Exactly. Because then we meet the team. Oh, we meet Russell. We meet Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on Russell Crowe?
I enjoy Russell Crowe.
Okay,
cool. I mean, I might be a little more fond of him at the moment because I did also just watch Gladiator not too long ago.
So good.
Movie that Ian keeps trying to do on this podcast and I keep saying no to because it's a certified classic.
It's so good. I just really want to rewatch it is the thing. Yeah.
It was on TV like, I don't know, last week or something, and so I watched it and I hadn't seen it in a long time. So,
yeah, I haven't seen it all the way through in years. I love Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Like or at least his movie performances, like,
yes,
Gladiator and A Beautiful Mind and LA Confidential and like all of these movies. I was just like, man, he's so good. And I think we've forgotten about him in the last few years.
Well, and then this too, like, again, it's not something you would typically see him in, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's like Russell Crowe. He's action. He's tough. He's not the
year. This is the year before Gladiator.
Yeah.
Really?
The year before Gladiator.
Oh my God.
Cause you'd see how swole his arms are in this movie.
That is true. They're usually hidden.
He's in Maximus shape.
They're usually hidden under very comfy sweaters, which I was into. But there's one scene where he's like leaning forward and his bicep is in front and he is flexing like his life depends on it. And I appreciated that.
The guy looks good. My boy looks good.
He doesn't sing great in classical settings, but
he does not sing great.
He's a great guy.
Yep.
Seems like a mensch.
Seems like a good dude. But yeah, I just like, I love seeing Russell Crowe in things because I don't see him very often. Yeah, I think he's great. Yeah. He's a family man. His name, John Beebe.
John Beebe.
John Beebe is the local sheriff and he's the captain of the Mystery Men, who are the kind of like the local hockey team. They meet up every Saturday and they play against each other.
He's the captain when they get to the game.
Yeah, he's just a guy who
plays. They don't have a captain.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the Saturday game.
Because they're just playing for funsies. They don't need a captain.
And then he gets kicked off.
Yeah, he gets kicked off the team and becomes. Yeah, he becomes captain as a consolation prize, essentially.
That was so fucked up.
It's pretty fucked up.
This, like, movie star, like, it's Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe, this movie, again, I think this could be a movie about a crime syndicate. I'm thinking Russell is either at the center of it, or he's going to bust the center of it. And this dude, like, this guy is the guy who takes down a town. And this movie begins with a Sports Illustrated article coming out about this town and this hockey league. And it's just kind of like, yeah, John Beebe, great accuracy, pretty slow. He's kind of getting on in the years, getting a little long in the tooth, this fucking guy. We later find out because Hank Azaria is playing some seedy Slytherin game to try and, like, steal his wife away.
Yeah, he's Mr. Steal Your Girl.
So he's got to slander him in the press. And because of this, Cole Meany, who plays the mayor of the town,
Yeah, it's like, John, you're too fucking old to play hockey. You get off that ice. You get off the pond.
I think it's so fucked up to kick anyone off a team that essentially just plays for fun. Like, that's just, everyone should be on the team. It's like kids in class where it's like, oh, we got to choose teams. Nobody wants, like, you're not even going to give them an opportunity to get picked by one of the teams. That's fucked up.
I mean, like, no, I understand.
And but it's not even that he's, like, garbage. It's just like, you're not as good. It's like, it was because Sports Illustrated said so?
Well, no, the town says so.
Yeah, because he aged out, basically. Because you just have to make room for the kids coming up, and that's how it's always been. The town committee, you know. There's like a set number. You got to make room for BB.
Justice for my boy, BB!
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. When she gets offended, I can't stop.
Yeah.
Respect our elderly.
Right? Because he's so elderly.
So old.
We're like, Russell Crowe, you are 39. You're pretty much dead. It's like, yeah. I'm Russell Crowe.
I have decades of work left in me.
Yeah, I either have a meth empire going at the fish house down the way, right. Or I'm a cop who's going to bust open a meth operation that's going down at the fish house down the way.
Oh my gosh.
I'm a gladiator.
Literally, I'm a gladiator.
I am in shape enough to be a literal gladiator, but not in shape enough to play this community hockey game.
Right. Hey man, skating's tough.
Yeah, right? Well, I will say 2 years later in A Beautiful Mind, they try to pass him off as like a 23-year-old grad student, and it's like fun is Russell Crowe 23 years old?
Ian, he has range. My boy has range.
Oh, emotionally, he's incredible. John
has anyone
Nash is
ever seen him as a 23-year-old?
Oh, I'm sure. I bet Russell Crowe was so hot at 23.
Looking it up.
He was either so hot or he's one of those dudes like Gerard Butler who has always looked 38. Like, he's just like, even that's, when he's like 15, he just looks like he's like, that guy just got off a shift down at the mine. Like, he's... He's put in a hard day of manual labor.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Is he super hot?
He is very good looking, Ian.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you can see stuff.
Hey. Okay. It's Australia.
Yeah.
It's, it's the Australian.
Hugh Jackman. Come on.
Guys, that's Google true. Russell Crowe Young. And
Google Russell Crowe.
Fun fact, if you Google Russell Crowe Young, three of the photos are Henry Cavill. Don't know what that's about.
That is a disservice to Russell Crowe.
But it seems a little rude.
Okay, so yeah, he's like so old, his bones are breaking all the time. He sucks. And so they're like, we gotta take you out of
his
this.
His bones are brittle AF.
So Steph, you've seen this movie more than we have. And just like, so Cole Meany, the mayor, is the one, he gets to dictate who's on the team and who's not? Does
not
the mayor
him,
always gotten to do that?
It's a committee, like, oh. a town hall committee. He's just the leader. It's not just him, though.
So basically the whole town was like, we voted and you're fucking old.
But really what it was, because, okay, so we find
it's
out.
It's really because of that article.
Yeah, it's got to be because of that article. It's because that he was the only one who was kind of shit on in the article, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but they were talking about it before, they said, and then,
allegedly.
Yeah, the article came out, but because, you know, it's such a small town, obviously everybody sees everybody skate all the time, and mm-hmm. everybody knew, you know, Stevie Weeks was ready to play.
Yeah, no, I mean, isn't he, though? So, okay, so that makes a lot more sense.
I got Stevie and Connor confused the entire movie.
Doesn't matter, at the end of the movie, things work out great for both of them.
but
that was something that was very interesting to me, because later on when Hank Azaria shows up, you find out he's the one who's written this article in Sports Illustrated that's shined a light on the town, and he's from the town. You find out that he like grew up there and then left and became a sports journalist and now producer,
and people in this town hate him for that.
That's why I'm confused. Oh. Why then would they listen to his article and be like, he's, you know, he's right about John BB-8. We gotta take that dude out. like seriously, take him behind the shed. Like, we're done
right.
with him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think they already made that decision before the article came out.
Okay. It wasn't like we gotta feed the mystery of Mystery Alaska.
No, honestly, I feed the beast. I could not see Mayor Colmeany listening to Hank Azaria, you know, about anything.
I mean, Hank Azaria shows up at that town hall and just gets roasted for like 8 straight minutes.
But like an old lady.
But an old lady yeah. was like,
she was like, she was like, you also can't skate. And I was on the hockey team for 1,000,000 years. Right. It's me, Russell Crowe.
No, that old lady's like, they did not kick me off the hockey team until last year. And I'm 95. Suck a dick, Russell Crowe.
She's like, there was a women's league bitch. Until I got hungry.
They should have. What? Yeah. That, I mean. Again,
that seemed to be the logical thing.
Yeah. I mean. There should be women skating too, but
there should be, or there should have been, like, it's weird that in this entire small town, we get like a kind of explanation about it in that conversation between Mary McCormick and Russell Crowe. But it's weird that you get there's no like little, what the fuck is his name from West Side Story? Anybody's or whatever's
yeah.
The girl yeah. Anyway, the girl who dresses up as a boy and is like, I want to play hockey. Like, why don't they like girls? We get no Hayden Panettiere from right. Remember the Titans.
No,
right.
Like Russell Crowe has 3 kids, and I don't know if you ever do you ever see them? Do we ever see his kids?
Yeah, they're the ones who say fuck me.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Other than that, they like disappear for a bit though.
Yeah, well, because they're not
like at Christmas, they're all skating out on the pond. And,
okay, so his kids are skating.
Yeah.
So that's something.
Yeah.
But
man, we are running a trend the last few episodes of me just missing big pieces of information. I mean, like, I watched that with my own 2 eyes. Somehow, just didn't imprint in my brain.
When did Shrek become an ogre?
Like wait, since when does a donkey talk?
This is wild.
What?
So we should go through the members of the team. Because, like we said, this movie is less about story and more about, like, characters and kind of their arcs and what playing the New York Rangers, because what the impetus for the movie ends up being the New York Rangers are going to play the Mystery Men of Mystery Alaska.
Yes.
Right.
On national TV.
On national TV.
On their day off.
Oh my God. We'll get to it later on. The Rangers, I think, get done dirty in this movie.
We can talk about that right now. They do get done dirty.
Yeah.
It's their day off, and it's a lose-lose situation for them because they have to come to this town, and like everyone hates them there.
Yeah,
like, they openly like mock them there. So they either win, and everyone hates them even more, and they crush the dreams of the small town, or they lose, and they got beat by a small town in Alaska. Like, there's no upside to this situation.
Yeah,
it's pretty much lose-lose, and it's their day off.
Yeah, that's the thing that pisses me off is like they have to go all the way to Alaska.
So even if they did have 2 days off, one of those days is going to be a travel day.
Yeah. They have to fly to an area of the world they're not used to, play an outdoor game on a pond, which is already kind of scary.
Yeah, with a lot of black ice, and they acknowledge, like, a lot more dangerous, like, terrain, I guess. But, like, it's a more dangerous situation. It's a more, like, it's a less, like, controlled environment. They could get injured. Like, I imagine during a regular season and they get injured in this one-off game. It's like, well, can't play the actual game because I got fucked up in Alaska doing this side project that the network wanted me to do, you know?
Right. So, well, then they said, you know, Mystery only has 11 players to the New York Rangers 18. I'm wondering if they didn't just bring, like, their fourth string, you know?
Maybe,
I'm pretty sure they would have held back on their...
It's just like
players.
Their B team, yeah.
Maybe, because the guys that show up and play, they're like wolves being let out of cages. They are so rabid and mean.
Yeah.
But then I also kind of understand, because again, it's their day off. They have to fly across the country to Alaska, play on a pond. And when
everyone
they show up,
them.
Everyone is an asshole to them.
There's no, like, there's, like, no audience member that's like, oh, yeah, maybe for them I'll cheer for this one. It's like... They don't even get booze. They just get silence.
Like, they'd sign a couple autographs, and that's, like, the
Stevie.
Nice. Yeah, for Stevie, because Stevie's a mensch.
Yeah.
Stevie, he knows what's up.
Yeah, and then they almost freeze their butts off.
And he knows what's up.
They have to like freeze their butt off while Little Richard sings the national anthem for 5 years.
That shit was amazing.
That was great.
Right?
That bit was genuinely hilarious.
Yeah, I loved it.
The Mystery Men get Little Richard to sing a really long version of the national anthem and the Canadian national anthem so that
right?
they can like basically freeze the other team while they're just totally fine because they're native Alaskans and give them the advantage.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. It's a pretty great scene.
Have you ever been to Alaska, Steph?
I have not.
Do you want to go?
Sure. I went to the
closest. Now do you want to go?
No. I mean, I can't.
Yeah.
No one can go anywhere.
But the impulse to travel is so much stronger now.
I know.
Tell me I can't do it. Now I want to do it all the time.
You're going to be that rabid dog, like, the second this is over, like, get me to Alaska! Get me to Alaska! I'll play hockey! I don't give a fuck!
Pull a sled, goddamn.
Yeah, the closest I've been was when I went to Seattle to visit some friends, and we went up to Roslyn.
Okay.
Which is the town where Northern Exposure was filmed.
Nice.
And so it was Sicily, Alaska, you know, but it's really Roslyn, Washington.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Lauren, have you ever been to Alaska?
Nope. I have been to Canada. I want to go to Alaska because I love sled dogs. but no, I've never been there. Hopefully one day.
I went on a cruise to Alaska.
I'm very jealous because I think that's a really good way to see Alaska.
It was amazing.
And I don't even like cruises, and less so now.
I was 14 years old, and I ate pizza every day.
I've heard the Alaskan cruises were really nice.
It was dope. I panned for gold. I ate so much salmon.
You ate salmon and pizza?
Salmon on pizza. Salmon pizza on salmon.
Salmon pizzas, baby.
I did whatever I could. That's all just to say Alaska's fucking awesome and really beautiful, and when we were there the people were nothing but really, really nice.
Anyway, that's the A plot. Is the New York team, what team?
The New York Rangers.
The New York Rangers got screwed in this arrangement. Now we just want to go.
And yet they're vilified in this movie. Yeah. This movie treats them like the orcs in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they're like, boo. How dare these bad guys be here? It's like, they didn't want to be here. They just wanted to be at home on their day off. They just wanted to be with their families.
They're the New York Rangers. They're fine. Whatever.
They're really fine. They're getting paid millions of dollars for
this movie. Is so anti-big city. Like, when they go to that court case, it's straight up like they're walking into a cartoon.
Yeah.
No. Oh, the court case.
Jacket. Everybody else is wearing suits and,
yep. Shall we talk about the court drama of it all? We have two court.
Yeah, because this is part of the A plot.
Yeah, this is part of the A plot, but also part of the B plot, because there's the other court scene that you talked about. There's almost a murder mystery in this movie because someone gets shot.
Yeah, should we talk about that? Well, that means talking about two characters. One, and both of them are members of the hockey team. Mm-hmm. One of them is named Connor, who mm-hmm. we meet. He kind of works at, like, it's like the drugstore. Yeah, pretty much.
It's a grocery store. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
You know,
Michael McKean is in this movie for like two scenes, which is awesome. Love seeing him in anything, and is playing just like a city jerk who's in town visiting from like the Walmart.
He's not visiting. They're gonna try to put like basically. Oh Walmart.
Yeah, they're trying to get the store. They're trying to put in Price World, which will close the general store. You know.
And he's in the.
Yeah, so he's in there being a dick and being like, you need Walmart to like turn this like hick tent around.
Yeah. But then we meet him because he's just been shot in the foot by Connor. Yep.
By Connor Fangs.
Yeah. And it was like a ricochet shot. What happens here?
Because
he can't shoot.
Right. Well, he said he was aiming for the feed bag. Like he saw, you know, I don't know why he was aiming for it. Like he saw a rat. I don't know. But it ricocheted and got him in the foot.
I think he was trying to scare him. He tried to shoot off just to scare him into like shutting up. And it ricocheted like off a sled or something and hit him in the foot. So now he's been arrested and he's like their star player because he's one of the young guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has to go to court against Michael McKean. And the lawyer, who's a character actor who I've seen in several things, I'm just blanking on his name, but his name is Bailey in the movie, defends him. Yeah, Bailey Pruitt. Defends him and essentially is like gets him off because he like plays back tape of Michael McKean after being shot in the foot, being like, "This town sucks. I hate everybody here. This is podunk bullcrap."
And the town swear words about the town. Yeah,
it's like a Dennis Leary bit. Like he's like swearing so much.
Yeah.
And then everybody's just like, you know what? Nobody talks about my town like that. I don't care if you got shot. You are not getting any money. You're not convicting. I mean,
that was like wholeheartedly a jury of Connor Banks' peers. And nobody else's peers.
Yeah, it's such a like a stacked jury. There's no way he's not winning.
This is the first example of some pretty reprehensible like closing of ranks in this movie. That is kind of unsettling. I think there's a couple of instances of like, oh, this is town loyalty to and solidarity between, you know, townspeople and between men that like, maybe we shouldn't go this far and maybe this is a bad thing and not as heartwarming as we think it is.
They're like, we'll cover up anything.
Yeah, no, you could get away with murder in this town.
Which is
like straight up a drifter could come through and someone could kill them in town square and like they would absolutely.
Which is the next thing I want to talk about.
Oh, God.
The other member, another member, not the other member. There's 11 members of this team. One other member is this cad named Skank.
His name is Skank.
Steph,
his name's Matt, but...
Talk about Skank. Talk to me about this guy. Who is this guy?
Well, I think he is the stereotypical... top of the, you know,
the cock of the walk,
typical like worst case scenario sports guy, single bachelor life sports guy, you know. Yeah.
But he is
an elementary school teacher as well, so
yeah
it's the best place to pick up chicks.
He is a sex criminal.
It's the best place to pick up chicks.
In this small of a town, people had to know him well enough to know that was a bad idea to give him that job. The first time we see him, he's talking about this woman that he's had sex with, who he's talking about, like, saying horribly demeaning things about. Like, horribly demeaning things, like, barely talking about her as a person. Just, like, genuinely terrible, terrible things that made me, like, my jaw dropped. That this is, like, where we're going in this movie, and like he's talking about in the locker room, because that's important later. And it's really fucked up because then someone basically, it gets out from the locker room that he has said these things about this woman, and then he goes over to her house to engage in sex again with her, and she hits him in the head with a shovel multiple times, to which I said, good, you fucking should.
Yeah.
If I was the only witness to that crime, I would not say anything.
She hits him in the head with a shovel in a scene that doesn't seem to be going for a laugh.
No.
And at this point in the movie, 30 minutes in, I kind of just like zeroed in and was like, is he about to get kidnapped and tortured? And this whole hockey thing has been like...
And that's how Russell Crowe gets back on the team.
And that's how Russell Crowe gets back on the team. But I was genuinely like, is this dude about to die? And this whole movie is going to be about covering up his murder because, spoiler, they're going to John Tucker must die, this dude. Because spoiler alert, no ladies, all the ladies in the town are like, wait, you too? And like, and they all just come after him. And they would be justified in doing so.
Yeah, but instead, it leads to this comedic scene where we're back in the locker room, and in a move that does not hold up in 2020, Russell Crowe says, like, whatever we say in this locker room is locker room talk, and that is sacred, so who spilled the beans?
Instead of, you shouldn't have said that, that was the wrong thing to say. Yeah.
And like,
exactly!
Not even just saying this is like, it's 2020 and we're being politically correct right now, like, we are, but it, like, in this movie, genuinely this happens and you go like, I don't like this guy.
Yeah.
And I don't think he should be rewarded.
It's not,
and
like,
then the
scene
and the characters reward him. Like,
yeah, it's not like he's like a little like, oh, he's a little stinker. Like, he should get away. Like, he's just a little good for nothing. Like, no, he is genuinely a bad person. And he's rewarded for this because the man that spoke out about this, which he should have, and genuinely does seem very uncomfortable with the situation, then has to go out on the ice basically naked.
In a jock.
In a jock strap, and yep. then has to throw himself on the ice with his back to the ice and slide, like, basically naked along the freezing cold ice. Like,
Grundle has to meet ice.
He is punished for breaking ranks and telling a woman that maybe she should not continue to have sex with a man who talks about her like she's a farm animal. That, like, she is just meat.
And, like, this skank
he
is...
He talks about, like he's a vet. Like, he's like, oh, I just had to give her the vaccination injection or something. Like, it was fucked up.
Skank?
Like, injecting her with your fucking semen? Gross.
As a human being.
I hate him.
He has only made it to 28, or however old I'm assuming he is, by the boys will be boys rule.
Yep.
And we need to stop that from happening.
He's also having an affair with the mayor's wife.
The mayor's wife!
Which seems like a bad idea in a town this small. Just the hot take.
Yeah.
It's really messed up. And there's like an extended sex scene between the two of them in this movie that I was still trying to figure out, is this a family film? And then that scene came on and I went, nope, I just saw a butt. And while they're
plenty
having sex,
of butts in family films.
Well, they're having sex and he's like not even looking at her. He's watching a hockey game.
Watching the game, yeah.
He's a sex addict. It's rough.
I don't even think he's a sex addict. I think he's just an asshole.
He's not even interested. Like, he's just, I hate him.
I don't want to give him a medical diagnosis. I want to say he's an asshole.
Yeah, you're right. He's the worst.
Because we came to this movie late and you've seen it, you know, it's been in your life for the past 20 years. Is Skanky, like, do you find him, like, charmingly kind of forgivable or...
No.
Okay, cool. No. I was just curious. Like,
because there you know, it's
because this character type was huge.
Yeah.
The Stifler character type.
There are some people where it's also horrible, but they're still charming, which is not even worse, but like, it's frustrating.
Yeah, because like,
no, just not. I do not find him charming at all. I find him gross.
Yeah, I also just feel like, because in most of those other movies that have characters like this, that character, like, even though they become lovable douchebags even, they usually get challenged and they usually get embarrassed or, like, they get a comeuppance for them to learn.
Yep.
I don't think, like, Skank gets hit in the stomach and, like, that's about it. Like,
he gets hit in the balls.
Hit in the balls.
He gets hit in the balls and then he still gets to bang the reporter at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. Like, he wins. He wins at the end of this movie.
He does. He gets the last laugh. He literally gets the last laugh of the movie.
Yeah, he literally does nothing, and he's the worst.
I want to talk about Stephen Grimes, who, if anybody watched Band of Brothers, he played Malarkey on Band of Brothers.
That's who he is.
Yep, that's why I was like, I know this dude. I've seen his face.
Oh my god, it's been bothering me this whole time.
His cherubic ginger face.
Oh, I feel so relieved. I was trying to figure that out the whole movie.
And stepped in, his dad is played by Burt Reynolds.
He sure is.
I
have a hard time seeing without thinking of Norm Macdonald on Celebrity Jeopardy on SNL. So that's unfortunate in this movie because he's a very serious guy and he's great, but all I think about is him guessing his birthday for Christmas and harassing, you know, Will Ferrell.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
He looks exactly the same in this movie as he does in Boogie Nights, and it's incredibly disarming. It feels kind of like he went straight from the set of playing Jack Horner to being like, now, after being like the Martin Scorsese of porn, I'm going to go up to Mystery Alaska and play an incredibly reserved moral judge.
When was Boogie Nights made?
97.
Oh.
So like 2 years earlier.
So yeah.
But he had done, I checked, he had done 8 projects between Boogie Nights and this.
Damn.
He's Burt fucking Reynolds. He's a champion.
Yeah.
So he plays the judge of the town. Do you want to talk about the relationship between the judge and his son? And then we can talk about, we can use this to talk about Marla and Stevie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's strained, you know, it's a strained relationship because probably as most father-son relationships are in that town, it's going to center around hockey.
Yep.
And Burt Reynolds wasn't good enough to play in the Saturday game. So, but his son is, and he's good. And even though the judge knows a lot about hockey, as everyone does, and he can coach, and he taught, you know, all the kids in the town how to skate, he himself couldn't do it, and maybe has some resentment for his son, and it's extra hard on him, probably because since he couldn't do it himself, he wants his son to be great.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's like Russell Crowe's character in like a couple decades, potentially. He's like, no, he's genuinely like, yeah, it's a road that that character could take if he chooses to become like bitter, embittered about it.
He's Russell Crowe's Obi-Wan Kenobi. And if you ever wanted to see
what Burt Reynolds'
Obi-Wan Kenobi would be, you'd love this movie.
Yeah.
Right.
He also has problems because his son doesn't pass enough. And he kind of like, and that becomes a thing later where his son, like that character refuses to pass to other people. He kind of keeps the puck for himself.
Yeah.
And then he lost it, so.
Yeah.
So Stephen Grimes has a sister named Marla. Marla's I wanted more Marla. I just thought this was an interesting character. Mm-hmm. She's dating Stevie, who is the youngest member of the team. Mm-hmm. He's the one who replaces John BB-8. And Stevie is one of those classic 5-year-olds in an 18-year-old's body.
Yeah.
He's a big dumb baby.
He is
a big dumb baby.
Yeah.
He's a really good hockey player. Yeah.
Yep. He's an adorable baby with Sean Hunter hair.
All of his brain cells go towards
Sean Hunter hair.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
This scene he gets with Marla, like intro scene with Marla, where they're about to have sex in the car. Is
snowplow.
Yeah Lauren, snowplow. You want to set this up?
No, not really, but sure.
Lauren set up the scene.
No, so they're in the snowplow and she's basically just like, we should have sex, and he's like, whoa,
this came out of nowhere.
And I think, and he looks more scared than excited. And she basically is...
It's a scary thing.
It's a very, like, awkward scene. I do appreciate a lot about it because there is a lot about, like, consent and, like, are we ready for this? I don't want you to, like... There's a really nice moment where she's like, I just don't want you to, like, go out with someone else because, like, she's had sex before and I haven't. And there's a really nice moment where he's like, I don't want to be with you, like, just for that. And, like... I won't dump you just because we don't have sex, which I think is really sweet.
Yeah, he's like, pretty much like, we don't need to have sex. Like, I'm not clamoring to have sex. Like, we don't need to do this.
Up till this point, that scene feels pretty much like a play. Like, I think that's a pretty good, like,
again, play. This is a play. Yeah. It's a play with a Rocky the Musical level hockey scene at the end.
And then she's like, oh man, you saying that you don't want to have sex makes me want to have sex even more.
Which is dope.
And she just straight up takes her top off and then pulls a condom out, which I appreciate because you never see movies. You never see people bring out condoms in movies. So, like, I appreciated a movie being like, yo, safe sex. That's a thing that you should do. Even though the kids that need to see this can't teenagers. See this movie.
Even though in Alaska, they call them penis blankets because they're really just mainly for warmth.
I mean, I do think it sucks that, like, it's a scene where, like, teens about to have sex are, like, openly talking about a condom because, like, that's very important. But also, it's in a movie where... kids can't really see this movie. It's like, it's only for adults. But
and there are enough kids that'll sneak in and see it.
And then the end of the scene is just like, he comes in his pants before anything could happen.
He comes in the condom.
Right. He comes in the condom. That's right. And then the end of the scene is them sitting in the snowplow, just like horrified.
Yeah.
Yep.
Horrified and disappointed. And that's like their last major scene together.
This is
their first and last scene.
It's like almost Maine. This whole movie feels kind of like almost Maine.
Yeah,
but like if every scene, like if it was like a writing exercise where someone was like, you have to include a hockey in every scene, like
you thematically like have to include hockey.
And like a different playwright wrote every character.
It's just a 10-minute play festival that was just like, okay, everybody in this like we have 11 playwrights. We have everyone gets a 10-minute scene and it's about a different member of this hockey team. Go.
I'd watch the shit out of that.
Yeah.
That's a Netflix series I would watch in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I almost did. It's called The Greatest Game or whatever. It's that English soccer show
It's made by the same people as Downton Abbey, but you haven't seen Downton Abbey, so you should just watch that instead.
No, it's because I didn't realize that this was there was a backdoor pilot about soccer in Downton Abbey. If they had wanted to make a soccer show first, they should have made a soccer show first.
They made it second, and you didn't care about it.
You know what, Lauren? If you were the inventors of Facebook, you'd have invented Facebook. So the next thing we need to talk about.
Well, damn. Consider me schooled.
Hank Azaria, like we said, Hank Azaria comes back as like the New York Rangers are coming. The New York Rangers are coming. The New York Rangers are coming.
Rangers are coming. One guy dies?
Yeah, let's talk about Bailey has to go to New York because the Rangers are like, yeah, no, we don't really want to go.
They're legally saying, like, we are exercising our right to not do this because it's our day off.
Yeah.
So the town basically sues them.
Nobody told them about it, I think, before whoever agreed to it.
Yeah.
So
they're saying, we're not going to go.
Right. It was their bosses that were like, yeah, this will be great for the franchise, you know, publicity, whatever. And so they filed a suit with their players union, saying, hey, wait,
not in our contract. Didn't
sign up for this.
How about we not do this? And so they're like, you know what? I'm going to go down. My name's Bailey Pruitt. I'm the Atticus Finch of this movie. I'm going to go down to New York City with the big guy. And I'm going to show them all how we eat, drink, and bleed hockey. And appeal to their hearts.
Yeah.
And he does it in the most closet, secret, nefarious way possible by making sure that he dies in that courtroom. he knows, he's just like, you know what, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out. And he drinks his vial and then he makes this impassioned speech.
He's like
I know I've got 30 seconds before the poison kicks in. Okay, this man's got heart. And he explains.
My dying wish is for you to do this.
Literally.
Yeah.
Well, because like he was going to say the word heart right before.
Yep.
Before his ticker went poof.
Yep. And now all the New York Rangers are like, fuck, I guess we have to do this now because someone died.
It's legit that. It's like fucking A.
God damn it. And he's like, checkmate right before he dies.
I almost wanted.
There's no way he'd be able to convince them otherwise.
Yeah, no, he's like, I'm straight, I'm going to die.
The camera pulls away, one eye opens just to check to see if they bought it.
It's a Romeo and Juliet situation.
Right?
That man's actually just faked his death and he's like at the game at the end in like in disguise, like, haha, I tricked you.
He's the friar if the friar like tested out his remedies on himself.
Messed up in one of those sumo suits that they had. Hey guys.
Yeah. That would be incredible. Yep. But anyway, so now everyone's like, all right, I guess we've gotta go. This guy died. He loved hockey so much and he couldn't even barely skate.
Yeah.
So I guess we've got to put up or shut up and we'll go to Mystery Alaska and play.
Yeah. There's also a subplot where BB-8's wife and Hank Azaria used to have a thing.
They were high school sweethearts.
And so they're kind of talking to each other. Hank Azaria is like putting on the charm. Russell Crowe's getting very jealous. And then they have like a kind of unnecessary fight in this movie because they got to give him another scene.
Yeah, I like the Tennessee Williams scene that happens because of this situation.
Yeah, she gets a big dramatic speech about, like, it sucks to be a woman in this town, which, like, I'm sure it does.
Yeah. I mean, she's not wrong.
She's not wrong. It probably definitely sucks to live in that town.
Yeah. I don't know. I like that scene a lot.
She's basically just like, look, I wouldn't be here if not for you. I didn't choose this town. I chose you.
Yeah.
I chose our life together. It sucks for me here sometimes, but I chose to be here because I love you. So it really sucks that you're doubting that right now and being a big dumb baby.
Yeah, that's the only reason that I'm here.
Yeah.
You are the only reason that I'm here.
Literally here for you. So, like, you're being a dumb dumb.
Yeah, it's, like, it's amazing because Russell Crowe, and again, it's why this movie feels a kind of like 10 or 12 short plays. Because in that scene, Russell Crowe goes from, I got you in check.
Yeah.
I've never seen that smile. I haven't seen that. I know your smiles. I know the smile you were giving him, which is a very playwright line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's heartbreaking. And but then she immediately is like, cool, that's your move, fine, Sheboygan, and I'm in. And she just like takes him down in a speech about what it means to be a woman in this town. And instead of being like, I don't know, we're kind of at odds, he just kind of goes, yep, you're right. I'm going to take the Dear Abby page and I'm going to cross out all the words that don't remind me of you. And I'm going to give you like an acrostic poem about your life.
Yep.
I thought that when this happened, it was going to be like one of those puzzles where it was going to like be full sentences. And then it was just words. I was like, oh, like it's sweet. But I was also like, oh. Okay.
I did also think it was going to be full sentences the first time I saw it. And yeah. It wasn't.
And I was going to be like, I am a idiot. I really thought that's what it was going to be. And instead it was just like a bunch of adjectives, like beautiful. And then when it came around to like simple, I was like, mm-mm. It was like.
It's like beautiful, radiant, simple, adventure, $9.99, happy. Like, I don't know.
9/11. What?
Oh my God. I understand. I don't hate it because I think
I don't hate it. It just wasn't what I was expecting.
Sure. My reasoning behind it is kind of like, if this town is as like male centered as it presents as in the movie, that like I would expect a show of affection and love like this more readily than I'd accept like him writing like a fucking sonnet for her.
No, this is definitely like a big gesture for him.
Yeah, and I kind of think keeping in character, I'm like, that's my first impulse was the same thing of just being like, that's it, and then I was kind of like, you know what? We have never seen him show anything to where that seems like not a big move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
from where we see him go by the end of this movie, like he's a pretty emotionally reserved guy.
Well, also like words of affirmation are not his love language. I think his love language is definitely like acts of service.
Oh, it's hockey.
Yeah.
I think he's like, you know, I provide, like I do things for our kids, but I don't really say what I feel, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that that's probably represented a big step for him. And I think that was really, really nice.
Do you think, well, let's get to the hockey game. Do you think the day of the hockey game or every Saturday, and again, this is another thing of why, like, there could be another movie of the crime syndicate beneath Mystery Alaska, the real mystery of Mystery Alaska happens. Man, there would be so many good true crime podcasts that would pop up in Mystery Alaska.
Mystery Alaska, it's a perfect name.
It's a perfect name for a true crime
it's
podcast.
It's insane that a town called Mystery Alaska is known for hockey. It's a weird thing, right?
It's a fucking front,
that's
guys.
So strange.
Because you know who's playing hockey every Saturday for like the whole morning? Mm-hmm. And then who's going to be really busy at practices a lot of nights, and who's going to be really busy during this big televised game? Mm. The sheriff.
Mm, that's right. Mm. Perfect time for the crime, baby. And then let's get that bank.
The deputy is the backup goalie.
Yeah.
So
he's the deputy too. Who was played by Randy from Monk, one of my favorite shows.
Yep, Jason Gray Stanford.
Yeah, I love him. I like legit cheered when I saw him. I was like, Randy!
Crushing it.
Right?
Love him.
He's a deputy on Monk too, and he's a deputy in Mystery Alaska.
These deputies all over the place. Nope. Deputy.
And he's
deputy,
the backup goalie.
Yeah.
He's the deputy goalie.
Yeah.
I always think in these small town movies, like when there's the big event, you know, the big football game or the big hockey game or, you know, the thing that rallies the town together. If it's one of those things where like the town will collectively just to kind of like agree to shut down to go watch this thing.
Yeah.
Or are there like some places that are like, well, I mean, like, you know, we're the fucking post office. We have to stay open. Like we can't not, we're the hospital. Like we can't just go watch a hockey game. Like, we're tending to so many hockey injuries. We can't just go to a game. Like, we can't do this.
But the doctor's at the game.
But yeah, the doctor's at the game.
The town doctor is at the game.
Well, yeah, because it's a town with one doctor. The other doctor is a ski dog that they're just kind of like, yeah, put a mock turtleneck on him, and then people believe he's a human.
Yeah, Lance Bork.
But again, perfect time for the perfect crime.
Perfect time for the perfect crime. I think it's a perfect time for a bank heist.
There's a whole other movie happening right outside the walls
right.
that they've built. So yeah, so the Rangers show up. Everybody's so needlessly rude to the Rangers. We've discussed.
Yeah.
Rangers fire back by essentially unleashing hell and becoming the Monstars from Space Jam.
The Mystery Men do score 2 goals.
Yeah, in the first period.
So, okay, as someone who watches hockey regularly, how does this stack up in terms of A, other hockey movies, and B, like, just watching a game? Is this, does this feel real? Does it feel, like, a little too far-fetched? Because I felt like 4-5 is a pretty high-scoring hockey game.
I mean, yeah, it's on the higher end. I mean, depending on teams, you're going to get usually around 2-1, 3-2, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless people are injured, you've got, you know, a bad night, whatever. You know, I've seen games that, have gone 10-1, and that's rare in NHL. That is super rare, but it's happened. And especially in playoffs, they're usually not that high at all. But for some reason, it was either last year or the year before, a lot of teams were getting a lot of points. And there were multiple games that had, like, 4-on-4, and they would have to go to overtime. And so then it was like, you know, and so you've got, you know, 10 points in one game, and that's rare. Like, so that's another reason why I thought that they had brought, like, their B team or D team even. Because I don't think... Yes, they have these two really good young guys, but I don't
think... They would get decimated.
I mean, it's the New York Rangers. Any NHL team.
But it's on their ice. Come on.
But they put up boards, and then once they figured out that whole going back and forth between the locker room thing, you know...
Yeah.
You know, once they got used to the ice, I think they would have done what they did, you know, and scored 5 unanswered goals.
Yeah, and then I would think at the end, if I was them, I'd probably, like, just chill out and let them score a few. Like, honestly, like, I'm kind of like, if I'm one of the Rangers, I'm like, guys, can we just, like, fucking not do this?
So here's one of the fun pieces of trivia I found out about this movie. No members of the New York Rangers agreed to appear in this movie because they disagreed with the representation of the New York Rangers.
That they wouldn't want to do it, or
They were like, "No, I don't want to be represented that way.
I don't want to be represented as, like, coming kicking and screaming to this town and then, like, decimating them."
Yeah, because it is such, like you said, it's a lose-lose situation for the Rangers. And if the real Rangers showed up in this movie, they're the villains and they are vilified. Like. It's not like they come in as, like, humble, graceful winners. They, like, at the end, kind of, like, begrudgingly clap for them or, you know, hit their sticks for them. They come off like dicks. Like, and so they're like, yeah, no, we don't want to be in that movie. But I'm sure the owner of the New York Rangers was like, you're going to pay us how much money to license our name? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it was okay to use the logos and everything. But, they're absolutely not a single... you know, Ranger, or anyone affiliated with the Rangers, and the only real people were the announcers.
Yeah, and Mike Myers.
Oh, we also forgot to mention that Russell Crowe, initially, he thinks that they're going to ask him to be on the team since the Rangers are coming. And
the Rangers are coming.
And he thinks that Burt Reynolds, or is it the mayor? The mayor is going to ask him to be back, and they're like, he's like, all right. Gonna ask me to be on the team because there's not enough people. There's, like, not enough people. They have no choice but to ask me. And they're like, yeah, so, like, you're old as shit still. But
they're like, oh my god, you're still alive.
Oh my god, we really thought that you would die the second you were off the team, and, like, because you didn't have anything to live for.
It's so good that retirement is being so,
like,
good to you.
Please spend some time with your great-great-grandkids, please. You may not have much time left. And as a consolation prize, they're like, but do you want to be the coach? Even though he's never coached before, has no idea what he's doing. And then the last second, Burt Reynolds comes in and decides, he has a change of heart, and he decides to be the coach, and Russell Crowe rejoins the team. So he gets to be part of the team for the final game. And he's a pretty instrumental part of that game, obviously, as we all knew he would be.
Hold on, wait. I want Steph. Could you talk about the halftime speech or the
two-thirds speech
he gives? Because they're winning 2-0, and then the Rangers come back and kick their asses, like, 5-2.
Yes, 5-2.
So set the scene and talk about this speech.
Right. So yeah, first period, obviously the Rangers aren't used to the climate and, you know, the ice, the size of the rink. It's like they were saying, it's a pond. It's bigger than Olympic sized rinks even. So
Operation Little Richard threw them off their guard.
Little Richard. So they were freezing and they weren't used to it. And they were down 2-0 going into the second period. But, you know, as so often happens in regular hockey games, you get over it. You know, you have to. You don't think about the fact that you're down 2-0. You think about the fact that you're going out to play hockey. And that's what you have to do. And so it's like a clean slate every time. And they came back and they figured out a way to stay warm by running in and out of the locker room instead of staying out on the bench. So they came back ready to fight, as any team would, being down 2-0. But especially when you're an NHL team down to a Mr. Alaska team. So they came back fighting and hitting because they got their strength back. And, you know, these guys aren't as big as NHL players. And yeah,
they get fucking wrecked.
Yeah.
Like, Russell Crowe gets flipped and shit, and, like, one guy gets his hand broken. Like, one guy gets flipped into the bench area.
Sergeant Malarkey's the one who breaks his hand, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty devastating.
Yeah, they're monsters. Because,
yeah, guys being guys, yeah, they're gonna, you know, check and knock into each other, but not the way NHL players are taught to. So, yeah.
And they're trying to start shit.
Right. Yeah. And the Mr. Alaska guys don't have boards. So they're not used to getting thrown into solid objects. You know, yeah. If they get checked off the ice, they fall into a snowbank.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they're not used to getting taken into hits. Wooden,
yeah. So they have Rangers score 5 goals and they come back, they pull their goalie. They go to the deputy goalie.
Yeah. Randy.
Yeah. So the coach, you know, wants to inspire his team and, you know, just gives a few fairly comforting words and then pulls the captain aside and kind of just gives him the little, all right, let's just, you know, keep our dignity. Don't let this get any worse.
Yeah. Let's just, like, it's better losing 5-2 than losing like 10-2.
Right.
So just hold steady.
But here's the thing.
Russell Crowe's like, I'm the fucking gladiator.
That is exactly his thought process.
Yeah.
And how dare you suggest that he would give in to anyone, especially the New York Rangers. He's not done. Stevie, are you done? No, he's not. Tree, are you done? No, Johnny, I'm not done. All right. Nobody's going to quit. They're ready. No. They're fired up. They are not defeated. They are ready to go for that third period. And as they're leaving the locker room, camera goes back to Burt Reynolds. Oh, he knows what he did. He did it on purpose.
He did it!
Nice assist.
What a great coach. Nice assist.
They needed to find it within themselves.
Yeah. It's great. They needed Mike's secret stuff, man. It's great. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I love it so much. I love a good halftime speech. It's
Ian,
great.
Ian, how have you not seen Friday Night Lights? This is insane.
How have you not seen Miracle?
You're friends with Eric and you haven't seen Friday Night Lights?
It's insane. You need Coach Taylor in your life. If you love a halftime speech, that's 90% of the show, Ian. Coach Taylor.
Yeah, I know. Clearasil eyes, Clearasil hearts, can't Clearasil lose.
Get out. You don't deserve to be on this podcast anymore. You don't get to make fun of me for not seeing the Mighty Ducks if you've never seen Friday Night Lights.
Steph's seen both. I think you're the tiebreaker here. Which do you think is the more egregious?
You can't ask me. I love hockey. Mighty Ducks.
Lauren hasn't seen a hockey thing. I haven't seen a football thing.
I've seen a lot of figure skating things. Okay, I think that might make up some of the difference.
It does make up some of the difference. Also, I knew Eric before I knew you, or before you knew Eric, and I didn't see Friday Night Lights until a couple years ago.
I'm going to watch it. It's my summer show that I'm going to start this year.
You need
last year was Mad Men. This year I'll do that.
I think I have seen one semi-hockey movie. I saw The Cutting Edge, where a hockey player becomes a Paris figure skater. Becomes so I think perfect. That counts.
Yeah.
I think it counts.
You're idiot. It's called Blades of Glory.
I have seen Blades of Glory as well.
He gives this incredible speech. It's awesome. Yeah. They go out and they score two more goals. One of them is scored by John BB-8. He gets his score on the New York Rangers. Then you got like 40 seconds left in the game. And then, Steph, this final move that they pull.
Yeah.
Like, the,
well, also keep in mind that Skank stops a puck with his dick, so you know, good for him.
Yeah, and while this happens, we've also kind of ignored the plot line of like he's sleeping with the mayor's wife, but the mayor finds out, and then the mayor's mad at him, and then he tries to make amends, and he like gets hit in the balls, and his first look is like over to the mayor, and he's like, "I'll do anything for this team. You saw me do it." And the mayor's like, "I guess we're cool because now you're out of commission." Like,
yeah.
It's a weird moment. And the mayor and his wife are finding passion in their marriage again, watching the Mystery Men win, which is, you know, it's like manipulative, but it worked on me. Like, I was like, yeah.
Hockey brings people together.
It does.
So then they're running this final play. This is the annexation of Puerto Rico of this movie. if you've listened to our Little Giants episode. Is this a common final move? Like, is this how you play out the clock in hockey? You stay behind the net and you just kind of like wait? Or
yeah, absolutely. If you know, I mean, because you don't want to give the other team a chance to take it and score on you. So if you can keep it as long as you can, because you want to be able to score and not have enough time for them to get it back.
Yeah.
Because it takes less than a second to score a goal. So yeah. And especially since they pulled their goalie, if they got the puck down by their end, they could easily score, you know, just by shooting it, because it doesn't matter if the clock runs out after they already shot it. So all they would need is a quick rebound and they could score.
So they get go for it.
Yeah. Cause even goalies, there's always the joke about, you know, goalies scoring goals. And I think it was last year or the year before, when Piccarini, who was the goalie for the Nashville Predators, scored a goal because the other team had an empty net, and he got it and he shot it and he flipped it, he lobbed it, and it went and it went in. So because they were they just didn't have enough time for him to like pass it to anybody else, so he just shot it and it went in.
Damn.
But that's, you know, so yeah, they're gonna, and well, it's they do it in the Mighty Ducks too. You know,
that's right, they do.
Get your team set up, you know, behind your net, get your formation ready to go, and
knuckle puck that shit.
Knuckle puck. So it was an absolute legit play.
Okay, that makes me feel even better because I think it's a sick move. Like, I was really excited about it. And I was like, I don't think this is like a panache, like fake thing made up for this movie.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It looks really cool. It seems practical. Seems like a good move. Yep. Connor takes the hit.
Especially if you've got somebody like that who has the speed and the skill to make that shot, that's what you're going to do.
Yeah. And then what happens?
It hits the bar.
And they lose. It's
the crossbar.
And they lose 4-5. But everyone stands and applauds the Mystery Men, including the New York Rangers.
Reluctantly, but eventually they get there.
And it's a beautiful moment. And then Malarkey goes up to his father, Burt Reynolds, and Burt Reynolds says, "Great game, son." And I got teary-eyed.
Yeah. As he always does with
all his stuff. Father-son stuff. It just hits me.
Ian's getting teary right now.
Oh my God, I loved it.
Bring people together.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
It's a heartwarming story.
Exactly. There's not a ton of like violence or.
No.
It's just 5-year-olds saying fuck me in like playfully aggressive tones. So the next scene that happens, our final scene. The New York Rangers are walking out on the red carpet to their helicopter to get on their helicopter and fly away. And they're taking with them Stevie and Connor.
Mm-hmm. They sure are.
We've been signed for like some minor league stuff.
Yeah, they've been signed to the AHL. AHL. Mm-hmm. They're both going to play in Birmingham.
Yep, and Stevie is saying goodbye to his girlfriend, and they are definitely going to break up.
She's like, we never even got to have sex. And he's like, again, that really didn't matter to me. I love you. And she's like, yeah, you say that now, but like,
you're definitely, definitely, definitely going to break up with me within a month.
You're going to Birmingham.
They are never coming back. Yeah. And that's kind of the movie.
That's pretty much the movie. Hank Azaria is like, I'm going to drive back. Cause, you know, I've been like, I love this town. I'm going to be back in June.
I've been humbled. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been humbled. I'm going to come back more often. And I like the move of, like, Russell Crowe is kind of like, look, man, I know you've been kind of Mr. Steelio Girl for this movie, but you're also Hank Azaria, and I trust you, and I'm going to leave you here to have a nice, heartfelt goodbye with my wife.
Yeah.
Because trust.
I like that move. I think it's a classy move.
Yeah. And they have a really nice goodbye.
Hockey brings trust.
I think that poem brought trust.
Yeah. And yeah. That's the movie. Steph, is there anything that we didn't hit? Any points of this movie that you wanted to talk about that we haven't talked about yet? There's a lot of weird slow motion, but I felt like, you know, it's the 90s.
That was the 90s. Fun tip. It was loosely based on a true story.
I told you.
Back in 1905.
1905? Right? That doesn't count.
Yes, it does.
It does.
In Canada. There was this team called the Dawson City Nuggets, and out of Dawson City, Yukon. And back in 1905, it was before the Stanley Cup was the Stanley Cup. It was just called the Championship Cup or something like that. And you could challenge the winner because it was awarded to the top amateur hockey league, you know, or and then whoever wanted to could challenge that team and take it away. And if they had won, they would have had it for like the longest period of time, like probably in history, because it was, you know, 1905, there weren't a lot of challenges flying around, and they did not win. But spoilers. So the Dawson City Nuggets challenged the Ottawa Senators for the cup. And they had to get from Yukon to Ottawa, which apparently is really far. And they ran into Canadian weather, bad storms. They had to, you know, travel by sea some of the time, and a bunch of people got seasick. Also, they were missing one of their best players because he was an election official back in his town, and he couldn't leave yet.
Huh. Oh, so there are some people who can't leave their jobs for hockey.
Right. Yeah. Well, there were in 1905. So
1999, they're like, fuck it. We know our priorities.
Right. So they get to Ottawa 36 hours before the game is supposed to be. The first, because it's best of three to win. The first game is supposed to be held 36 hours. They ask for an extension. Senators say no. They play the game. They lose 9-2. Okay. Not the worst score I've ever heard in my life, but, you know, not great. So they're like, fine, we'll try and regroup. They failed miserably and lost the second game 23-2.
Oh my God!
So.
Well, actually,
gauntlet thrown. Ottawa said, fuck you, get out of our house.
Well, fun fact, this movie, I guess, was just the sequel to that because Russell Crowe actually played in that 1905 one. He's just that old.
Man,
he needs
he's
to
so
quit
old, he needs to stop playing hockey.
Here's the thing. If he did, if he was an Ottawa Senator, he's probably the guy that was like one of the Senators' best players who ended up playing for a couple more years until he joined the army in World War One and was supposedly killed in battle, but they never found his body.
Because he then became a gladiator.
Yeah. He went back in time, became a gladiator.
He became a gladiator. He went his back in time, was, became a gladiator.
His and name was John R2, and and he reinvented himself as John BB.
Yeah, and then he aged, and then he went to Alaska, and then he became a hockey player out there, and then they said, no, you're too fucking old.
Yeah, yeah. His next incarnation is John Dio sucks. sorry. But, yeah, I that's fucking fascinating. I had no, like, I didn't, I kind of saw something like that, but I also really wasn't too sure. There's a little fun tidbit I did appreciate. We got a scene in Marla's room, and she has a Scream 2 poster, and I find that really funny.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that, too, again, when I rewatched it. I was like, oh, yeah, it's very, hey, this is what year we're in.
Yeah. Yep. I also think there's a great moment in Russell Crowe's speech. I forgot to mention it. This proves, like, aside from them being huge assholes to the Rangers, like, the town is, like, incredibly forgiving and really nice, as we've seen how much crime they've covered up in the courts and right. the police system. But when they're giving – when John is giving the speech about how they're going to go out there and they're going to try their best and they've got heart and nobody's going to give up, most of the time when you get a speech like this in a sports movie, it's like, now look, the other team, they're a piece of crap. And we're going to go out there and we're going to annihilate them. They stink. We're going to annihilate them. John's whole thing, because the very a town full of nice people is like, guys, they're pretty good. Like, yeah. They're good. I'm not going to lie. Better than I thought they would be. Honestly, I'm doing a lot of regrouping right now myself. But let's go out there and you know, we'll be good too. We're pretty good. It's like a great speech that's delivered with the intensity of like a Maximus Gladiator arena speech.
Right.
Like the actual text of it, I think could also have been done in like an Owen Wilson-y, like, I don't really know, man. Like,
or like a Fargo accent.
Yeah. Well,
they're pretty good.
Now, you know, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
But I think we're pretty good too.
I think we're pretty good. You know, we're also pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I got. Do you guys want to guess what the budget of this movie was? 1999. How much money did this movie cost to make? Think of this cast.
35.
Oh, jeez.
35?
35.
35 million? What do you
think? Yeah, I was going to say 40 because 40? Of the helicopter. And
it's a nice helicopter. Yeah. And the New York Rangers of it all.
Even though they're fake, but you still got to pay for the logo. And
still got to pay those New York Rangers.
That logo is the highest paid actor in the movie.
Yeah.
Right?
The movie cost $28 million to make.
Oh. Wow.
In 1999, pretty modest budget. Yeah. Adjusted for inflation today, that's like about a $50 million movie.
Okay.
It's like A Star Is Born money.
Okay.
Do you know how much this money this movie made?
I can't imagine much.
Steph, what do you think?
I don't know.
It cost 28.
It cost 28. 30?
30? All right. Lauren?
I'm going to say like 15.
15? This movie made $8 million.
Ooh!
This movie is generally regarded as a huge financial disaster.
That's terrible.
Oh, that hurt. Oh, man. Like, so five terrible. People saw... Steph, you're one of the five people that saw this movie.
It's true. I am. Yeah.
And the other four were the ones that through the years were just whispering, like, Mystery Alaska, much like the New York Rangers, that's pretty good.
It was just me. I just kept going back. Like,
amazing.
Yeah, it was just me.
So that's this movie. That's Mystery Alaska. I guess we'll go down and start doing recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
In 2020, Steph, you presented this movie to us. Would you recommend Mystery Alaska?
Yes.
Yes. A resounding yes. You still love it as much today as the day you first saw it?
I do. I think
or
it's
more
great.
So.
It's a great I think just as much. Because again, you know, we talked about the things that are not quite okay.
The skank of it all.
But as far as like your basic storyline, I think it holds up. You know, it's still because we still have hockey. Actually, as of today, we still have hockey.
We do.
So, yeah, we will. Yeah.
So that's there. You go.
Yeah.
Lauren, what about you?
I think if you are a sports person and a sports movie aficionado, then I think this is definitely worth potentially adding to your collection. I do not come from it from that standpoint, so I think that it's probably not for me, which is totally okay. I think it's a well-made movie with some people that I really love, but I kind of wish there was more sports in it if it's a sports movie, or that like there was less sports of it if it was less about the sports and there was more of a plot line. It feels kind of half-baked to me at certain points. And so because I don't have that like emotional sports connection or emotional like saw this at a formative time connection, I probably won't return to it. So it's a conditional recommend. As many
you recognize the merit.
Well, yeah, I recognize the merit. I don't think it's for someone like me.
Sure.
That's fair.
I was very charmed.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite sports movie I've ever seen, but I do think it like fills the void of like a movie sect that I call Sunday sweater movies.
Yeah.
That are kind of like, you turn them on while you're drinking your coffee at like 10 in the morning. And then like, yeah, you know, you'll turn it yeah off, or you'll like kind of make breakfast or go in and out and do stuff and like have it on in the background. It's like, I conditionally just kind of love movies yeah set in cold places where other people are wearing sweaters and stuff, because yeah I typically live in cold places. So it just makes me feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Again, I can't wait to see the play of Mystery Alaska that I just kind of want this to be. Like, I really think they could do something with
it's
this.
It's just Almost Maine.
It's, yeah, it's just Almost Maine, but with hockey.
Almost Maine and Mystery Alaska.
Yeah, it's a great doubleheader. It's yeah like At Home at the Zoo by Edward Albee. awesome. So, like we always do at this time, is there a modern analog for Mystery Alaska? Steph, what you think?
I honestly, I've been thinking about this ever since we talked about it at the beginning. I think because of, you know, like Lauren said, it's kind of half-baked. Like, it's not a full-blown sports movie. Plus, they don't make a lot of sports movies anymore.
Yeah, they really don't.
So, I honestly don't think there is, because of that element. I mean, yeah, it does have a lot of, you know, the drama and stuff. But I cannot think of, you know, aside from like The Last Dance, you know, which isn't even really a sport, it's not a movie, it's a TV thing, but it's a documentary.
You can still recommend the I was considering recommending The Last Dance.
All right. I mean, I guess that's the closest thing.
It's yeah, also, like it's Creed, also, like, yeah, like, yeah, like yeah The Last Dance. Like, there is some stuff, but yeah, I mean, or you could go with the whole small town vibe of it all.
Right.
I'll let you have The Last Dance, though.
All right. Yeah, I guess I'll go with that.
Yeah? Are you sure? Yeah. Unless, do you have another one?
I don't. I really don't.
I mean, The Last Dance is incredible. If you've not seen it or haven't watched it, listeners.
I've only heard about it from Eric. So that's all I know about it, which is apparently amazing, but
it's remarkable. It is truly like not in an ironic way, not in a like you've got to like basketball to like it way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is very similar to this, I think, in that it presents the behind the scenes players and the on court players of the 1996 Bulls, like kind of the 1994 through 1996 Bulls, and yeah some other key players of the NBA. And like really gives you like almost every episode is kind of just like a profile of one player who helped make up the team and then like how they related to Michael Jordan. Nice. And it's incredible. It's really, really good documentary filmmaking.
Yeah, I would also say documentary wise, Cheer on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm out here.
That's a really good one.
Which also focuses on the people. Yeah. It's a very small town.
Wow, that's brilliant.
It focuses on the sports in a small town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ian?
Oh, I was going to say, if you want to go with the other movie that's happening underneath Mystery Alaska, The Mystery of the Mystery, there's a great movie on Amazon right now called Blow the Man Down. It came out, I think, at Sundance last year, but it's playing on Amazon Prime. But it's about this kind of sleepy town up in Cape Cod with these two sisters that are mourning the death of their mother. And it's a sleepy town where there's a lot of stuff that doesn't meet mm-hmm the eye. And I don't want to ruin anything because it's a very mm-hmm cool blending of a bunch of genres.
I'm going to watch that.
It's great. It's a lot. Okay. Like, it is 90 minutes of just kind of like, oh, this is fun. I like this a lot.
Bold.
Yeah. Highly recommend. Lauren, what about you?
Because I am not a huge sports movie aficionado, I don't have a huge catalog of those movies going on in my head. I wanted to recommend something based on the setting, much like Ian. I wanted to recommend a movie set in Alaska, and that movie is Togo on Disney Plus, which is about you may know the story of Balto, about the vaccine run that a bunch of dog sled teams underwent as kind of a relay race to save a bunch of kids from an outbreak, like, I can't remember, almost 100 years ago now. And it's a really, really beautiful story about this small town and about this man played by Willem Dafoe and his dog Togo, who leads their team to help save all of these kids. And it's a really beautiful movie. It's also got a lot of like action scenes on the ice, I'll put it that way. Yeah, and then on a less serious note, because I'm never gonna have any other opportunity to recommend this movie, I have to recommend this movie that Ian and I turned on called Pottersville, which also very similar to this kind of like strange vibe, and also could be something that's going on in the background of this movie.
I would love if that was happening underneath this movie. It's another like small town.
Michael Shannon's playing the lead. It's a very small town. It's about a man who
starts dressing up as Bigfoot.
It's insane. It's a bad movie.
I watched that earlier.
Yeah, it's about something. Yeah, Michael Shannon finds out that his wife is cheating on him with a furry. Basically.
With a furry played by Ron Perlman, and his wife is like Christina Hendricks.
And then
Thomas Lennon is there. Ian McShane is there.
Yeah, one night he gets drunk and puts on the gorilla suit and kind of like runs about town, and people think that he's Bigfoot. And so he had to boost up the economy of this town. He just keeps pretending to be Bigfoot and keeping up the ruse. It's very strange.
It's yet another movie where we cast brilliant actor Michael Shannon in the role of a completely normal person who appears crazy because he's being played by Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon cannot play an everyman. We need to stop this. He's insane.
Oh, how you doing, Hank?
Yeah, so I'm never going to get
another. Kill you.
Yeah, I am never going to get another opportunity to recommend this movie, so I have to say it. Pottersville. And then my other recommendation was Togo.
Incredible. Steph Dan, do you have anything you want to plug on this podcast? Anything you want to?
I second Pottersville, let me tell you. 100%.
I think we make up half of the people who've seen that movie.
I think it's on Amazon Prime. I want to say it's on Amazon Prime.
It's a great one to have a couple drinks with some friends and watch Pottersville.
Turn it on at 1 o'clock in the morning and just dissociate completely.
That's exactly what happened to me.
Yes.
It was probably 1 o'clock in the morning and it was recommended to me.
Solid middle of the night watch.
All right.
Solid.
Sure. I'm not going to sleep. I will watch this.
I think if you watched Pottersville in broad daylight, I think part of you would die. Like, I think there's some part of your soul that would just be like, I can't handle this. I don't know how to deal with this in broad daylight.
Well, it's a funny story. That if you turn on Potter's Story anytime before 10 p.m., you're just watching The Descent.
Oh,
but then if you turn it on after 10 p.m., it turns into Pottersville.
Gotcha. That makes total sense.
Yeah,
I believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have anything you want to plug? Anything happening artistically that you're excited about? Or
On Thursday, there's this group in Michigan that does online trivia for arts organizations, and it's Williamston's turn.
Nice.
Thursday night. Nice. So it's like a $5 buy-in per team. You got teams of six, and then half the money goes to the arts organization.
That's fantastic. And Williamston is the theater that you are the resident stage manager of in Michigan. It's a wonderful theater. One of them. Yes.
So if you have any, if you are looking for a place to donate to support the arts, that would be a wonderful place.
Doing that, and the Michigan Shakespeare Festival, where you are an artistic associate, and the in residence stage manager. And just an overall wonderful presence.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you guys so much.
Of course. Lauren, do you want to briefly talk about The Vanishing Act?
Yeah. So Ian and I have an audio drama that at the time of this episode's release may...
The trailer will at least be out.
The trailer will definitely be out, if not the first or second episode. We have the trailer, which will come out, I think, as of now. It's going to be next Tuesday. That'll be up on our feed, so if you haven't listened to it already, it'll be that weird one that looks different from all of our other episodes and is much shorter.
It'll say bonus in all capital letters.
Yeah, so check that out. But it's a little fun audio drama that we are doing with a bunch of the guests that we've had on the show before. It's a lot of people whose voices you'll be familiar with. And the first episode is coming out on July 6th.
So listen to that.
So please check that out. We've been working on it for a very, very long time, and it has a lot of the tropes that we've talked about on this podcast.
Including something Mystery Alaska has, which is a ragtag bunch of misfits.
God, we love a ragtag bunch of misfits.
And something else Mystery Alaska has, which is a mystery underneath the mystery of Mystery Alaska.
Mystery in all capital letters. That's essentially all I'm working on these days.
Fantastic. Check out Not Another Film Podcast on Instagram and Facebook at Not Another Film Podcast and Twitter at Film Another. Send us an email with movies that you would like us to do to notanotherfilmpodcast@gmail.com. Or like if we know you and you want to be a guest or whatever, like send that as well. Like we're always looking to expand our friendship.
And and we can record via Zoom now. So like there are truly no limits.
It's amazing. All right, folks, check out Mystery Alaska. Thank you so much for listening. Steph Din, it is always a pleasure.
You as well. Thank you so much.
Bye.